And welcome back to Coast, MJ Evans, Chris, of course, author of the book Zechariah Sitchin and the Extraterrestrial Origins of Humanity with us. We're going to talk more about Sitchin's work, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, MJ Evans with him. MJ, you were ready to talk about the Nephilim, I believe, coming down to breed and everything else. I'll let you pick it up from there.
Well, what I'd like to talk about is the fact that these people, and I guess we can use the word people
beings.
We are the,
yeah.
They're very intelligent beings. There were two main characters. They were the sons of Anu, the king on the planet Nibiru. The first one to come down and establish the colony here on Earth was Enki, and he had a brother who was slightly older, who was born of the correct bloodline that they had on their planet, and his name was Enlil. Well, each of them had sons, probably a few girls along the way, but they didn't much talk about those.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of sibling rivalry between these two based on the way in which they were born, Enki, not born of the proper wife of Anu, and Enlil, who was in fact born properly, and therefore inherited the legacy of kingship on their other planet, on their planet, plus on Earth. Well, eventually, one of those firstborn sons of Enki had done some dastardly things. He was accused and convicted of murder. He was exiled. And when he came back from exile, he decided that he was going to take over Earth. He wasn't entitled to it by his bloodline, but he was a pretty, well, I call him a scoundrel, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, he started to boast that he was going to take over Babylon, which already had its own king. And he did do that eventually. He also boasted that he was going to take over the spaceport. Now, there was a linkage between Earth and the other planet. And that after Noah's flood, that place of connection, was probably you could call it a spaceport,
mm-hmm.
Was located in the center of the Sinai Desert. Well, when Marduk decided that he was going to essentially storm that spaceport and become the commander there, two of the sons of the original Anunnaki, Nephilim, decided that they weren't going to let that happen. They weren't going to give over control over Earth to essentially a renegade sibling. So a son from Enki and a son from Enlil got together. They made a proposal to the king, Anu. There was a council of Nephilim. They made that proposal to all the higher-ups, so to speak, and they were given permission to take what they called the ultimate weapon. It was stored in Africa, in a mountain. It had its own control center there, and they were given permission to use the ultimate weapon to stop Marduk. So they did that.
They did.
Essentially, they hit about seven sites. The first site they hit was the spaceport. They took it out of existence. As I said, it was located in the center of the Sinai, in fact, a little settlement known as Kadesh Barnea. So they unleashed the nuclear bomb on that site. They also took out the control center, which was located not too far away in the mountains. Then they also had gotten permission to take out two cities that had been identified as immoral.
Sodom and Gomorrah, right?
Sodom and Gomorrah, absolutely. Now, when they hit those two cities, they were located south of the Dead Sea. It caused a crack in the tectonic plate, and it allowed the southern valley south of the main body of the Dead Sea to crack and create a flow of Dead Sea waters into this very large area. And that extension of the Dead Sea, by the way, is now drying up under the vicissitudes of global warming.
What's so amazing to me, Chris, is when you compare what you've just said, what Sitchin has written about, with the Bible, with Genesis, and just add those two together, it all makes sense. I mean, when I was a young kid in catechism classes, right, Catholic classes, and they talked about Sodom and Gomorrah, and Saul's wife was not supposed to turn around and look at the explosion, or she turned into a pillar of salt. That means that go ahead.
Actually, she turned into vapor. The term salt was a translation error. Yes, the human body is made of all kinds of minerals, but essentially she disobeyed the order of the Anu king.
And she got too close.
Well, she got caught in the wind. Zechariah wrote a very interesting essay that was posted on his personal website, and it was called The Evil Wind. And what he explained was essentially that aftermath of the explosions created a cloud of nuclear contaminated dust that actually blew along forced by the climatic patterns at the time, blew along the 30th parallel, crossed enough territory to reach the settlement of Sumer, and it took out every man, woman, child, chicken, tree, every living creature. I remember learning somewhere in Bible study that the city of Sumer was nothing but a set of buildings. There was no life there. As a matter of fact, in that part of the Dead Sea area, people even today have birth defects as a result of the contamination of the nuclear residue. I mean, it's kind of scary. These two sons tried to stop an illegal takeover of planet Earth.
Well, Robert Oppenheimer, our father of our atomic program, picked up the idea, literally, of atomic explosions from ancient Indian texts and writings.
Yes.
And
they have documented that those areas exactly as it was written about and described in Zechariah's books, which he drew from ancient sources, that there had been a nuclear explosion. Now, the interesting thing is that explosion, those explosions, I should say, because they were multiple, have caused Zechariah to illuminate his belief that time is circular. And he has many examples, and his discussion is extremely lucid. What he said was, if it happened in 2024 BC, it will happen again in 2024 AD. Now, if you start counting on your fingers, you find out that you haven't even covered both hands, and we will be at 2024 AD.
Pretty darn soon.
And Zechariah, again, believes that time was circular. I studied futures. Future studies is a discipline, not as well known as it should be, but the scholars that created that discipline had four aspects of futures that they discussed: possible, probable, preferable, and plausible. They also believed that a trajectory in motion will continue in motion and add and perfect itself. So the concept of a possible nuclear war can be seen if you look closely at the areas that are having trouble today. If you look at the threats against the state of Israel and know that after Noah's flood, the control center for the connection between Earth and the other planet was located at Jerusalem, and you pay attention to the proclamations of all of the the nations around the state of Israel, you can see a trajectory in motion. Now, whether or not there will be another nuclear explosion, we know a lot about it because the good guys used nuclear to stop World War II and to stop the carnage that that war was causing. The interesting thing is, in ancient times, it was two sons, one of Enki and one of Enlil, who decided to stop the discussions and boasting of one of their siblings who had a bad history. I mean, this guy was trouble from the word go. So it was the good guys that caused the first nuclear explosions on Earth, and it was the good guys in our historic, our modern times, who decided to stop the carnage of World War II. And that came to me as I was writing. It's not the bad guys. It's not the guys out there that are doing dastardly things that are going to use nuclear. It's the good guys who are trying to prevent any contamination, if you will, of the future trajectory. Oh, God, it's early in the morning, isn't it?
Well, anyway. You got to be used to it, I guess, Chris.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, one of the things I talk about in one of the final chapters of the book is this possibility that there are strands of information threats in motion that could end up, God forbid, could end up seeing, my view now, the good guys use nuclear weapons to stop aggression or stop political boasting that is really, really serious. So we get a look into a possible future when we examine what's going on in the Middle East. And I thought that was important enough to take from history.
Oh my God, yes.
Zechariah's discussion of what happened in 2024 AD BC, and to postulate, now this is my interpretation, to postulate the possibility of a repeat. Zechariah had a book called The End of Days, and he lays this out in that book, and it's fascinating reading. He does not give a date for the return of the planet. And there is a lot of speculation out there, particularly on the web, about the return of the planet Nibiru. The planet doesn't have to come back if, in fact, there are things going on Earth that predict what future events could turn into.
Can this be stopped, MJ?
Well, it can be stopped if the current Earthlings figure out how to live together, how to get rid of their petty grievances, how to get rid of vendetta, how to get rid of all of these forces that now manifest in wars. The technology that is being and has been developed is absolutely awesome. How can Earth continue by killing its own beings over and over and over again? There are people predicting the end of planet Earth in terms of its Earthling population. Well, if we don't do something, if we don't examine what we're doing, what has been done for centuries in terms of the killing of Earthlings by other Earthlings, if we don't figure out how to live together, if we don't figure out how to get rid of all weapons of mass destruction, then maybe those predictions that history will repeat itself will come true.
Let's take some calls here for you, Chris. You ready for some calls? They're lining up here for you. Valerie in New York, go ahead. What do you got, Valerie? Val? Nope.
Where'd she go?
She disappeared somewhere in the atmosphere.
Out in the ether.
Let's go to Atlanta, though. Juan's with us. I know that. Go ahead, Juan.
Hola.
Hi there.
Hola, George and MJ.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi there. Good morning.
Hi. My question is why the Anunnaki would mess with creating humans that are, instead of using robots, which are more efficient and more last longer and will easier to control, instead they went with humans, which, don't last long, are very inefficient when it comes to mining. They,
Well, maybe they also wanted to seed the planet. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I think you're right, George. I think that essentially, if you read the Bible and you read Zechariah, they created Earthlings to become willing workers, and they made them in their own image and after their likeness. In other words, they created us, Earthlings, in order to be like them. So I suppose you could exaggerate that concept and say, we are the gods on Earth. Again, I don't like the word gods when I refer to human beings because we're too flawed. We have developed ideas, information, technology that does not do justice to those who created us.
No, it does not do that at all. At all. It's amazing work of Zechariah Sitchin, and equally so, Chris, your work on his work. Well done.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I worked very hard to make sure that all of Zechariah's ideas, all of his writings, were treated straightforwardly and as he wrote them. As I mentioned earlier, he saw himself as a reporter. Well, I'm a reporter who happens to have an academic background, and I think his work needs to be illuminated. Thank goodness his 12th Planet and perhaps a few other books have been translated into languages that are extant on Earth, and there are at least 20 different language versions of his book, The 12th Planet. He was, in my judgment, and with the judgment of many others who knew him like I did personally, traveled with him, read his material, paid attention, thought about it, he was a genius. He lived almost a century. He was 90 when he died in 2011, and his books are now the legacy that we have to draw on to find out information that might save this planet, that might save human race. God forbid we should ever be faced with an Armageddon. By the way, my last chapter in the book deals with the concept of Armageddon, and I urge people to pay attention to what is in motion in various parts of the earth and to figure out we were created to be smart. We've got to be smart enough to save planet Earth and smart enough to save the human race. We may have to do some sacrificing to do that, but we've got to do it if we believe that this planet deserves to exist. By the way, in the ancient writings, in the ancient writings that are called the Enuma Elish, meaning those are Sumerian words, they talk about the origin of our solar system. The planet that we now call Earth was originally the first planet spawned by the sun.
Oh, really? And then it got captured, I think. Chris, we're going to come back and wrap things up and take final calls next. Welcome back with MJ Evans, Zechariah Sitchin, and the Extraterrestrial Origins of Humanity. MJ, you're talking about how Earth might have been the first planet to grow here in the solar system.
That's what the ancient evidence tells us. There's an ancient set of seven texts, information etched on clay tablets called the Enuma Elish, which talks about the origin of our solar system. Our planet, now called Earth, was hit by the other planet in its formative years. And it was then hit by one of the moons, and it was shunted into the position that we now find ourselves in the solar system, third from the sun, or seven if you count from the outside in, which is the way the Nephilim and the Anunnaki count it. So There's an awful lot to learn in Zachariah Sitchin, not just about the people from, or the beings from the other planet, but also about our own planet.
Absolutely, and experts are now saying that the moon was formed because of that collision. And
yes.
I find it amazing, MJ, I mean, absolutely staggering that the ancients would know about this, and now we're backing it up and corroborating it. It's incredible.
Absolutely. Zachariah put a subtitle on one of his books. It said, "Is Modern Science Catching Up with Ancient Knowledge?" And as I say in print, yes, yes.
Who told them, or how did they know this kind of history? And I guess it was passed down word of mouth originally, and then they wrote it down on tablets and things like that. But how did they get the original knowledge of what happened in the beginning of the solar system?
Well, a lot of these ancient records were stored. The Anunnaki dictated information. Their civilization is very, very old. I can't even hazard a guess as to how old. We don't have those facts. But the Anunnaki and the Nephilim dictated their history to the Earthlings. And those first Earthlings who took that information and wrote it down on clay tablets, we call them the Sumerians. Many, many authors refer to the Sumerian civilization as though it was those created people who had the ultimate information, when in fact it was the people, the beings who came from another planet. And we get confused with this stuff because we can't hardly envision or understand a planet of beings that are so intelligent that they are hundreds of thousands of years ahead of where we are with our technology and our knowledge.
All right.
It boggles the mind.
Oh, it really does.
It makes the contribution of Zachariah Sitchin all the more important that he dug out how it happened, that we know what we know.
Now we go back to the phones. First time caller, Ryan in Port Huron, Michigan. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, George.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Chris, too. I guess my questions are, what are your thoughts, or have you ever came across the idea that, like, that they're stuck on this planet?
That they're still here?
Yeah, like, that's another force, like the good guys. I'm not saying that they're bad, the Anunnaki, but they, like, force them to stay here, and there's, like, a Stargate around the planet or something. Like, even, like, what George said about the Earth. Like they put the moon there.
What do you think of that, Chris?
Well, I think that everything that your caller just referred to is possible. I don't think we have any evidence to prove that it is in fact the way history unfolded itself. But I think what we need to recognize is that we Earthlings do not have all the answers. The more we explore space, the more we send vehicles out there, the more we can learn about what's going on. Our history as a planet is born in the galaxy, and the more knowledge that we acquire and fit together the pieces of this ancient puzzle, the smarter we'll be, and hopefully we can use that smarts to save the planet.
Hopefully. You would think so.
I have faith in human nature. I believe that when the truth is laid out, that good people will absorb it, embrace it, and do something to make it happen.
Do you think the Hall of Records that Edgar Cayce has talked about might include information about the Anunnaki?
I don't know all of them. I belonged for a long period of time to the Research and Enlightenment material. I visited his library. I've read some of the things. I haven't read them all, so I can't authoritatively answer that question. All I know is that Edgar Cayce had a skill, a capability that is phenomenal. There is a young man who now believes himself to be the reincarnation of Edgar
Cayce. That's David Wilcock.
That's David Wilcock.
Yeah.
And it is possible. We know that the soul lives beyond the body. And if it recycles, as David believes, then it is possible that knowledge comes from the soul, and there's more to be discovered. The human race is phenomenal in its potential capabilities. I believe that the human race can come up with answers that will answer a lot of the questions that come into our minds.
Let's go to Ron in Fresno, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I'd say it just doesn't bode well for the human race. I mean, I agree we should all get along, but to know that there's this more advanced race plays with planets like the dictators here play with countries. I mean, it doesn't bode well for us that their little petty arguments get in the way, and that's just the way they play their games, especially if there's a whole race or planet of these beings. I mean, right?
Yeah, you would think the universe is a warring universe, Chris, wouldn't you?
Well, and yes, you would, and I'll tell you, I had an opportunity at a conference that was being held in Southern Nevada. A gentleman came to that conference to speak, and he brought with him a few sets of binoculars that looked up into the sky. And when it was my turn to look through those pieces of technology, I saw little slits of light going back and forth, until two of them going in opposite directions hit each other, and you could see the smash. Yes, there is probably wars going on out there inside our galaxy to this day. There's nothing we can do about that except know it. And we can work to give our planet a healthy, survivable future. There's nothing we can do about the fact that there may be 15 or 20 other civilizations out in the deep space in other galaxies. There's nothing we can do about that. We can take care of ourselves and make sure that we do not contribute to the annihilation of this little piece of space we call Earth.
Anne in Toronto, International Line. Anne, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to ask if Zakaria gave any explanation for why the Anunnaki that were depicted in Sumerian sculptures looking just like us, and then there was one Sumerian statue found of an Anunnaki goddess that was clearly reptilian. And I have a theory based on various knowledge and a relative that worked for the secret space program, but why that occurred. But did Zakaria state or have an opinion about, did you find any information about why there was that difference in an Anunnaki that looked like a reptilian compared to all the many ones that looked just like us?
Well, whether or not, I'm going to try to answer your question, whether or not it was Anunnaki or whether there are beings from other planets, other parts of the galaxy, who are reptilian. There are people who have written about this, talk about it at conferences, who have firm belief that there are other types of beings, some of which may be reptilian. It may be they are as smart and as benevolent as many Earthlings are. We don't know. There are so many questions that are out there in space that we don't have answers to, that all of us need to be dedicated to reading everything we can get our hands on to smarten up, to be more knowledgeable, to pass that knowledge on to our children and our grandchildren. I mean, we are in the infancy of the intellect of this galaxy. Our universe is vast. We are at the kindergarten level of exploration.
Do they ever talk about multiverses, other universes?
No, I don't think so. I think they were preoccupied with their own, just as we are preoccupied with our own universe, part of the universe. There are a lot of questions that are emerging out of modern science, and we owe it to ourselves to read as widely as we can, to evaluate that information, to absorb that which, in our own judgment and intellect, seems to be possible. Maybe it's probable. Maybe it's preferable. We have no way of knowing the future. We'd like to, but we have no way of knowing. But we can look at the clues. We can look at the trajectories of themes or strands or river flows of information that are coming out. It'll take us all of our lifetime, but I can't think of a better way to spend our lifetime than learning about what's being found, what has happened, and evaluating the truth of it. The truth is out there. We just have to find it, study it, embrace it, and work as best we can to preserve Earth and the human race.
Did Sitchin ever explain to you or show you any excitement about the things he discovered?
Yes. Yes, he was a very stately, mild-mannered person, but he got a tremendous kick out of finding evidence from the past and sharing it with people. There are hundreds and hundreds of people who had the opportunity to see him in conference, to talk with him. There's a handful of people now. We just met a week ago, a small handful of people just met who knew him personally, among them his niece, mm-hmm. Janet Sitchin, who also has a book about her uncle's work. And there are people who are willing to carry the torch forward. What we have to be careful of is that people don't use their own imagination and piggyback on the factual work of Zachariah Sitchin. We can't let people use his work without attributing his ideas to him. That's one of the things that's been happening in the arena, and it really gets me riled up and angry that there are some newcomers who take some portions of the idea, run with it, exaggerate it, and deviate and from what Zachariah told us. I believe we can have confidence in his material that are in his 14 books, and we can invest our confidence and use our own intellect to go beyond it. He only lived 90 years, that we should all be so lucky.
You got that right.
But if we can carry on his tradition of study, of searching out the facts, of evaluating them, we will live up to the investment that the Anunnaki and Nephilim made in creating the human race.
Kevin in Huntington Beach, California is a first-time caller. Go ahead, Kev.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, Kevin.
You know, when you look at what Zachariah wrote and you look at all the world history and you study back to the first writing in cuneiform, the obvious conclusion is the reason they came here was to take the gold to lower the temperature of their planet, mm-hmm. because they did the same thing we've done, which is industrialized. And they needed to cool the planet. And there's only two things gold is good for, and one is reflectivity, which that's why all the solar shields for the space program have a pure gold shield.
It's all gold. That's right.
They coat the windows of all of the spacecraft with a very thin layer of gold to protect the inhabitants of those space vehicles from solar radiation. So, yes, we still use it. I'm convinced that Earthlings' preoccupation with gold is an inherited gift from the Nephilim. I've often wondered, why gold? Why gold? There are other metals out there that are more useful, perhaps even more valuable, and yet the history of the human race is focused on gold. So I guess we inherited that.
Can you imagine how much it would be worth today, all the gold that they extracted from the planet?
Oh, I know. And there is more of it, but we need to recognize that gold is not the be-all and end-all of the endeavors of Earthlings. We need to recognize that there are new substances. They're finding, when they examine the periodic table, there are other substances. They've even had to add some numbers to the atomic weights of those tables, because we are still inventing, finding new combinations. We're not done yet.
Well, great work, by the way, Chris. Thank you. MJ Adams Evans, that's the real name. Zechariah Sitchin and the Extraterrestrial Origins of Humanity. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.